My name is Samson. I can tell by the looks on some of your faces that you know my name. I can tell that you've heard of me. I'm not surprised, because in my day, everyone knew the name of Samson. My enemies spoke my name with great fear. You see, I was the strongest man to have ever lived. As a matter of fact, if I would have lived today, you all would have accused me of being on steroids. But you see, I didn't need steroids, because I had the spirit of the living God living within me. And the spirit of the living God is the one who made me strong. If I were to compete in your Olympic Games today, why, they would have to make a category just for me. I would have to beat my own marks. Some of you probably think I'm exaggerating. You think, well, with our training methods today and the well-honed athletes that we have today, you would just be an average Joe. Well, I'm here to tell you I was the strongest man to have ever lived. If you don't believe me, let me tell you a few stories, true stories, about me. I was born and raised in the small country town of Zora, about 12 miles due west of Jerusalem. And as a young man, I was on my way to the nearby town of Zimna, just 4 miles away. I often made the walk from Zora to Zimna. There was a young woman there that I was quite smitten by, you see. Well, on this one occasion, I was walking down the road as I often did, and I was sort of lost in my thoughts as I often was. I could practically walk that path to Zimna in my sleep. And all of a sudden, as I was walking through the vineyards, I heard a rustling. And immediately I heard a deafening roar. It was a lion. It's not what you're thinking. It's not the kind of lion that you know. Not one of your caged excuses for a wild animal that sits lazily in one of your zoos and gets some dead meat thrown to it at 10 and 4 in the afternoon. Not one of those lions. Now, this was a young, strong lion who had lived by its wits in the wild. Its body had been honed by the chase, and its jaws were strong enough it could snap the bones of a jackal. As that lion began to lunge toward me in a split second, I began to feel the Spirit of God come upon me. I have to ask you, though, what would you have done at that moment? Go run and hide? Call for your mother? Make a mess? Not me. Not Samson. As I felt the Spirit of God rush upon me, as that lion lunged, I moved to my left, and with my right hand I grabbed his hind leg, and then I grabbed the other one, and I picked him up, and I began to pull, and as I pulled, I felt the tearing of sinew and flesh, and I dropped him. And as he twitched one last time, I thought, it's true. I'm the strongest man to have ever lived. Now do you believe me? Not yet? Let me tell you another story. You've heard of the Philistines. They were our ancient enemies. They came into the promised land some years after we had gotten there, and they occupied primarily the coastlands. Little by little, though, they began to infiltrate into our land. And the problem is they had superior weapons to ours. And so we were pretty helpless in the face of the Philistines. And little by little, we just kind of began to get used to the fact that they were there with us in the promised land. You can imagine those Philistines had heard about my great strength. And more and more, as I grew, they were threatened by me. And On one occasion, I was forced to hide in the territory of Judah, in the cleft of the rock, the large rock at Edom. And I was out there in the desert, and an army of 15,000 Philistine soldiers came to the territory of Judah. And they came first to the elders of the city, and they said, "Listen, we don't want to cause a problem here. We just want Samson. Hand him over to us." The men of Judah were not up for a fight. And they found me out there at the cleft of the rock, and they said, "Samson, there's nothing we can do. You have to turn yourself in. Let us bind you. Let us bring you to them." And so I turned myself in. I let them bind me with fresh new ropes. Not binder twine, mind you. Not the yellow stuff you call rope that your kids jump with in the playgrounds. No, this was thick, fresh hemp. It was the kind of rope that we used in our seaports to moor a boat, a ship even, to the docks. And they bound me with this rope, and they brought me to the field of Eli, and they placed me there. And a couple of hundred yards away, there were 15,000 hungry, fierce Philistine soldiers. And I heard their war cry, and I felt the trembling in the ground as they began to run towards me. And once again, I felt the rush of God's Spirit upon me. Again, I ask you, what would you have done? Run and hide? Not Samson. I began to look around me, and I knew that I would need some weapon, something to use. And I saw next to me a dead donkey. And it just had recently been killed. I could tell that, and so its bones would be still strong and heavy and not brittle. I reached down and I grabbed the jawbone of that ass and I pulled it out. And immediately, with the Philistines upon me, I began to turn and swing. And I felt the cutting of flesh and bone. And within just a few minutes, the Philistine were running away. And I looked around me and I saw heaps upon heaps of Philistine soldiers. And I had killed 1,000 Philistine soldiers with the jawbone of an ass. Still not convinced? Still doubt me? Okay, one more story. I was bored. I used to get bored a lot. My people, the Jews, they were boring sometimes. So I took a little excursion, a little trip out to the beach, out to the coast. And I walked around and I thought I would try to slip in disguised to the Philistine city of Gaza. And the Philistines, they know how to have a good time. And I slipped in undisguised, without being recognized, and I was having my fill. I was having a great time. About midnight, I thought, well, I better get out of here. I better get home. And I began to walk out towards the city gates of Gaza. And I began to sense something, and I began to realize that I had been detected. They knew that Samson was in their city, and they thought that this was their opportunity. And I learned that they had laid an ambush at the gates of the city. They had shut the great gates. And you must understand, the gates of a city like Gaza are the pride and strength of a city. It was surrounded with walls so thick you could drive iron chariots over them. And they felt that they had me, that I was theirs. And I strolled right up to the gates. I turned my back to the gate and I looked out upon the city of Gaza. And at each side of the doors, there was a huge, huge pillar. And these pillars were 6 feet wide of hardwood, and they were mounted on a foundation that was driven 15 feet into the ground, hinged with bronze and bronze bars reinforcing the whole thing. And I grabbed hold and I began to push and pull. And little by little, I felt the creaking and the groaning of the gates. And I pulled the post right out of the ground. You should have seen the looks on the faces of the people of Gaza. I could have just thrown the gate down and walked off. Not me. Not Samson. I took the gates over my shoulders and I walked 28 miles to the hill that is across from Hebron. And I dropped their gate, the pride of their city. Let them come and get a team of asses and drag it back. That's what I did. Hopefully you can see that I was the strongest man to have ever lived. And yet I know. I know that when people remember the name of Samson, they do not only remember me for my strength. They remember me for my weakness. I know that when you think of the name of Samson, you probably think of me as the weakest strong man to have ever lived. You don't just remember me for my strength, you remember me for my failure. See, before I was even born, God had set me apart for a purpose, a mission, a ministry, a calling. The angel of the Lord had come to my mother. You see, my parents had been unable to bear children, and it was a great shame to them. And the angel of the Lord came to my mother and said, "You shall give birth to a son, and your son will be raised up as Israel's next judge and savior and deliverer, and he will deliver your people from the yoke of the Philistines." That's what he told my mother. That's not all he said. He also said, "Your son is to live as a Nazarite. Your son is to take the Nazarite vow from the day of his conception to the day of his death." A Nazarite was one who was separate, dedicated to God. And what that meant for us was that I was to keep throughout my life three simple rules. And I have to tell you that my mother and my father never stopped reminding me of those vows. I would come home and my father would look at me, "Samson, don't let anybody ever cut your hair." What kind of father says that to his son? "No razor shall come upon your head, Samson. That's your strength." My mother would walk into my room unannounced. "Samson, never touch a dead body. No carcasses," like I would want to. "But nothing unclean, Samson. No dead bodies. Don't go near them." She would also remind me, "Samson, never drink. You're a Nazarite. No wine for you. No strong drink. Stay away from those Philistine parties, Samson." On and on, year after year, my parents would remind me of my vows, remind me of my commitments, the things that I could not do, the things that I was not allowed to do. I have to tell you, I came to resent that. In our day, when a person became a Nazarite, it was something they chose to do. It was their choice. And it was always done for just a season of time in their life. But I was given this burden as an assignment from the day of my birth to the day of my death. And I resented that. One day, as a young man, I was on one of those journeys to Timnah. It was a few weeks after I had killed the lion. And I was going there, and it was a very hot day. The sun burnt down upon my forehead, and I was tired, I was hungry, I was thirsty. I noticed off to the side of the road the carcass of that young lion that I had killed, and something drew me there, and I walked over to the lion, and lo and behold, I found in the carcass of that lion a swarm of bees had nested, and oozing out of the honeycomb was the sweetest honey you've ever seen. And I thought, "Oh, that looks so good." And as I reached down to the honey, I heard the voice of my mother, "Never touch a dead body, Samson. Don't touch a carcass. It's trouble. Stay away. But I thought to myself, oh, but I'm so hungry and I'm so tired. And why else would God put this right in my path? And so I reached down and I scooped some of that delicious honey. Oh, and I just put it on my tongue. I felt my body almost immediately begin to strengthen. I took more and I just lifted it up and it dripped down my beard and it was wonderful. And then I stopped. I'll never forget it. I stopped in my tracks and I thought to myself, I just broke my vow. And nothing happened. No lightning has struck me. No earthquake has swallowed me. I'm fine. I feel better. I'm strengthened. Maybe my parents were wrong. Maybe my vows were not all that important. Maybe I could compromise a little bit here and there. Maybe sin is not really that big of a deal. I went on to Timnah. I didn't mention to you that I was to be married there. And as the groom, it was our responsibility to put on the wedding feast in the town of my bride. And, oh, I have to tell you, I mentioned it before, but you don't understand. These Philistines, they know how to party. Oh, my goodness. And I wanted my party, I wanted my wedding feast to be up to snuff, to be everything it was supposed to be. And so, oh, we brought in the best wines and cheeses and meats and everything. It was beautiful. And you have to understand, I mean, I know your wedding feasts cost a lot of money, but this went on for days and days and days, and it got wilder and wilder, and those Philistines, it was raucous, and oh my goodness, I saw things there I could never mention in a place like this. It's amazing. And we were having a good time. And my bride-to-be, whom I would consummate the marriage with at the end of the wedding feast, well, she had brothers and friends and young men that I wanted to be accepted by, and I wanted them not to think of me as some kind of holy Joe. And so when they offered me to drink of their wine, I thought to myself, why not? Nothing happened last time. Nothing will happen this time. And so I lifted the wine, and with much more or less hesitation than the last time, I broke my vow. Didn't taste very good. But I grew to love it. And the more I drank, the better I felt. And once again, I said to myself, look, no lightning, no earthquake. I feel good. I feel better. Even though I have broken my vow, I feel fine. As a matter of fact, the Spirit of God is still with me. It's a whole other story, but at the end of that wedding feast, things got really out of control. I never even married that woman, but I ended up having to kill 30 Philistines. The Spirit of God was still with me, even though I broke my vow. My vows were not the only thing that I resented. That sweet honey was not the only thing I wanted to taste. The fruit of the vine was not the only thing I wanted to experience. The carcass was not the only thing I wanted to touch. You have to understand, I was a red-blooded young man. You know what that means. You talk about having to sow your wild oats. That was true of me. I didn't mention that how I met that woman I was supposed to marry in Timnah. I had traveled there and I saw that gorgeous, lovely face, and she caught my eye and I caught her eye, and it was just, oh baby. And we knew. And I raced back to my parents in Zorah and I said, Mother, Father, I have met the woman of my dreams. She's beautiful. I want to marry this woman. Go get her as my bride. And I expected them to be happy. Where is she from, Samson? She is from Timnah. Samson, is she a Philistine? Well, yes, mother, she's a Philistine. But, Samson, could you not find a young girl from our own people, the Jews? Samson, you are to be separate. You are to be dedicated to God. You cannot marry a Philistine woman. Can't do that, Samson. You know what our scriptures teach about marrying within our faith. But I insisted. And I wouldn't let it go. Day after day, I persuaded them. After all, hadn't God led me to her? Didn't God want me to be happy? Hadn't He given me these desires for this young woman? Well, it didn't work out. But I found that from then on, it was easier for me. It was easier for me to indulge my fantasies. I mentioned earlier the trip I had taken to the beach and my time in the city of Gaza before I pulled out the city gates. And one thing I left out. In the city of Gaza, I was there to be in the clutches of a prostitute, a harlot. I know what you're thinking, but that's just the point. I could do something like that. I could spend the night with a woman like that. And the next thing, I could be strengthened by the Spirit of God to pull out the city gates and embarrass the Philistines. You see what I mean? It didn't seem to matter. I could do that and the Spirit of God would still strengthen me. I wondered if it was because there was one vow I would not break. Have you ever thought that you'll go so far, but there's one line you will not cross? And for me, there was that line. And it had to do with my hair. I had never cut my hair. I had never broken that vow. And I was determined that that one vow, that visible sign of my Nazarite commitment, that symbol of my strength, would never be broken. Then I met Delilah. You've heard of her too, haven't you? She was a woman. I met Delilah, and I couldn't believe my eyes. That was a woman. Hair as black as a raven, olive skin, and eyes so dark they just made you melt. And oh my goodness, she could fill a dress. Delilah. Her name means worshiper, which is no surprise because every man that saw her worshiped the ground she walked on. And she saw me and I saw her, and you know how it happens. Women were attracted to me, strong and courageous as I was, and we were drawn to each other, and like two magnets, we just came together. Whew, Delilah. She wasn't perfect, though. She had one problem. She was a nag. She would get on something and she wouldn't let it go. Just like a dripping faucet. Just day after day after day. Would you stop? Oh. Sometimes I wondered if it was worth it. She got on this thing about discovering the secret of my strength. She wanted to know, what was it, Samson? What's the secret? And she started on this thing, and it was kind of like, Samson, you know, we love each other. We got this thing going. And you got to be open with me. You know, we got to have a transparent relationship. And so I'll play along. So I said, if someone ties me up with 7 bowstrings, I'll be as weak as a child. A couple of nights later, after we had had our fill, I was sleeping and I was awakened by Delilah's voice in the middle of the night. Samson, Samson, the Philistines are upon you. The Philistines are upon you. I woke up and I found my hands tied with these 7 bowstrings and I snapped them like thread and I ran the Philistines out. "Samson," she said, "you're not being honest with me. I mean, we have a wonderful relationship. We have to be open. Why won't you tell me?" I thought, "Oh, well, I'll play along." It wasn't the bowstrings. I was mistaken. It's fresh rope. You tie me up with fresh rope and I'll be as weak as a child. A couple of nights later, we'd had our fill. I was sound asleep. And in the middle of the night, I hear her voice, "Samson, Samson, the Philistines are upon you." I woke up and I found my hands tied with rope, fresh rope. And I snapped it like thread, ran the Philistines off. And same thing. "Samson. Now, you've got to be open with me, Samson. This really isn't working." And you know what I mean? She kind of began to withdraw from me a little bit. And I thought, well, maybe I'll tell her part of the truth. And so I said to her, "It's my hair. And if you take my hair, and if you weave it into 7 braids with a loom, and then tie me up, I'll be as weak as a child." Well, I don't think I have to tell you what happened. We had our fill and I fell asleep, and in the middle of the night I hear it again, "Samson, Samson, the Philistines are upon you." Well, I ran them out of there just like I had before. This time, she was really mad. And she said, "Samson, stay away. If you're not going to tell me the truth about yourself, if you're not going to have this open and honest relationship, then I'm not, no more." Now, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking he may be strong, but he sure is stupid. But I felt as if I could trust her, especially as I looked into her eyes. They just, it hadn't hurt me before. Why would it hurt me now? And so I told her. I said, "If you cut my hair, if a razor comes upon my head, the strength of God will leave me." That night, as I was sound asleep, she brought a man in from the village. And he shaved my head. And he tied up my hands with rope. And in the middle of the night, as you might have guessed, she woke me. "Samson, the Philistines are upon you." And I rose up and I thought, here we go again. And I began to try to free my hands. And I could not free my hands. And I did not know that the strength of God had left me. And the Philistines sensed a kill. Fame and fortune would go to the man who held my severed head under his arm. And they came upon me and they grabbed me and they began to carry me out of that room. And I looked back and I remember, the last thing I remember seeing was Delilah. And they were giving her money. The love of my life had betrayed me. And the next thing I knew, I was in the bowels of a Philistine prison. And they took a knife and they cut out each of my eyes. And the pain seared through my head for days and weeks. And after I had healed, they took me down into this basement part of the prison where they ground wheat with an ox going round and round a grinder. They unhitched the ox and they replaced it with me. They put the yoke around my neck. And they forgot about me for a time. My hair grew back. But I had a lot of time to think. And I thought a lot at that moment about how God had set me apart since I was a child. I thought about the fact that He had given me a ministry. He had given me a purpose. He had given me a mission. He had given me a calling to be the deliverer of Israel, to deliver our people from the yoke of the Philistines. And here I was with a yoke over my own neck, feeding Philistine soldiers with wheat I was grinding. I don't know how much time passed, but the Philistines decided to have one of their yearly festivals in the temple of Dagon, their god, their false god. And it was a time when all the important people and all the peasants came into the temple of Dagon, and they would celebrate and praise the name of their god, Dagon. And it would go on for days and days, and they would drink, and it would get wild, and that's the way they worshipped their false god. And as things got wilder and wilder, the crowd began to chant, "Samson, Samson, we want Samson." And they sent a little slave boy into the bowels of that prison, and he led me by the hand, and he brought me into the temple of Dagon, and there I was, and I was their sport, I was their entertainment, I was a cheap laugh, and I heard the blasphemies against our God. And I thought to myself, how did this happen? I was called. I was given a purpose to glorify the name of our God, and now they're taunting Him. And it was nobody's fault. It wasn't God's fault. It wasn't my parents' fault. It wasn't the women's fault. It was my fault. I asked that little boy, that slave boy, to place my hand upon the supporting pillar of that temple. He placed it there, and I knew that temple well enough to know that the other pillar would be here. And I stood there with those people taunting and laughing, and I began, and I looked up to the heavens, and I prayed a final prayer. It was a prayer like I'd never prayed before. And I said, "Oh God, oh sovereign Lord, let me die with these Philistines. Avenge your name and mine in my death." And I pushed and I pushed and I pushed. And once again, I felt the Spirit of the living God rush upon me. And as I pushed, the whole temple began to crumble down upon itself. And I heard the crowd beginning to cry and wail and call out for help from Dagon, their god. And it fell upon us. And it's been said that I killed more Philistines in my death than I had in my life. You've heard it said that when you die, your whole life flashes in front of you. Now, I can tell you that's true. As I pushed upon those pillars and as I felt and heard the roof of that temple begin to cave in upon us, my entire life flashed before me. I remembered my parents and their words. I remembered my vows. I remembered all of it. I remembered each woman I had loved as well. And I thought to myself, in that split second before my death, I thought, what happened? God had given me a ministry. God had set me apart for a purpose, a mission, and God had given me everything I needed to accomplish that mission. All the strength I needed to overcome my enemies was given to me. No one took it away from me. No one took my ministry away. Not my parents, not my girlfriends. But I squandered it. And I squandered it on sin. You have been given a purpose. You have been given a mission. You have been given a ministry. It may be very different than mine. It probably is. But you've been given one. And I want to tell you that the lesson I learned through all of that is that no one can take your ministry away from you. And there's no enemy so great that God will not give you the strength to overcome him. No one can take it away. But I'm also here to tell you that you can squander it on sin. And you may think that you're getting away with it. You may see God's blessing on your ministry for a time. But before you know it, you will lose the thing that matters the most to you. I am here to tell you that no one sins and gets away with it. Not me, not you. You have a Savior that you count on every day for the grace of forgiveness. And He forgives you time after time after time. But I'm here to tell you that your Savior also warns you. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, that he shall also reap. If you sow to the flesh, you will reap from the flesh corruption. If you sow to the Spirit, you will reap from the Spirit eternal life. No one sins and gets away with it.